Hi, you're listening to Universal Energy Radio. This is Self-Mastery Through the Law of Attraction, and I'm your host, Mary Jo Bull. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. Shout out to those of you connecting through the internet. You'll also be able to connect via telephone, especially if you have a question. The purpose of my show, ultimately, is to assist listeners and callers to reach resolution about issues or situations or circumstances that they're dealing with. I create a safe space for listeners and callers to give some attention and focus to those circumstances, conditions, situations, relationships that would seem to be problematic in a constructive and directed way. How do I do that? Well, I help you to unpack it all so you can see your way more clearly about the real nature of the problem and allow solutions and revelations and epiphanies to emerge. Ultimately, I help you to declutter your thinking. I help you to get clear in your thinking and to connect you to your thoughts and emotions in a way that makes practical sense, that is easier for you to replicate and practice, and that clears the way for solutions and manifestations to occur in your experience. As I said, if you'd like to speak to me directly, you can call 718-664-9124 to be connected to the studio. Hit the number 1 on your phone to raise your hand, and I'll open your mic. You don't have to reveal your identity. I will ask for a first name, but you can make one up if you want to. I will say that the more authentic you can be, the easier it is for me to connect with your energy and offer clearer direction. Please be as clear and concise as possible with your question or situation to give us maximum time to get to clarity and direction for you. So let's get started with tonight's show. Last week, I talked about an experiment that was done by a pair of Russian scientists in the mid-90s, and the experiment demonstrated their hypothesis that the matter, the material, I should say, that makes up this universe, that material that we call photons or packets of light, that stuff is affected by human DNA. And that experiment demonstrated that packets of light, these photons, react to human DNA. That is incredibly significant because what it tells us is that there is something in our makeup that organizes matter and brings it into some sort of focus into this physical world. So that's pretty cool to think that the stuff that our world is made of reacts to, responds directly to our human DNA. So another piece of that picture is that our DNA reacts to emotion. So photons of light react to our DNA, respond to human DNA, responds to emotion. And where we saw that demonstrated was back in the late part of the 20th century. There was a very famous project that was undertaken by a very large group of scientists called the Human Genome Project. I remember when the announcement was made that these scientists were going to make a very precise and focused and definitive study of our genes and our DNA. And the expectation at the time that the announcement was made was that because we are considered to be the top of the food chain, if you will, the highest sentient being on the planet, the expectation was that we would have 100,000 genes or more, because scientists believed and had worked with the idea that we have a gene for every protein our body creates, and our body creates over 100,000 proteins. So that was their expectation, that they would find and be able to illustrate and lay out 100,000 genes or more for human beings. After this exhaustive effort concluded, scientists were confounded and somewhat disappointed to learn that, in fact, we human beings don't have that many more genes than even some primates. In fact, we have a little over 30,000 genes, and there are four other subspecies who, like us, what they discovered, do not create vitamin C in the human body. Those subspecies included an insect, a rodent, a primate, and I don't remember what the fourth one was. It might have been a bear. And those four subspecies and human beings do not create vitamin C in the physical body, with one exception. And this is where things get really interesting. What they found was that there is one part of the population that does create vitamin C within the physical body, and that subsection is pregnant and lactating women. What they found was, in the presence of the love hormone, oxytocin, which is released within the body of a pregnant and or lactating female, in the presence of oxytocin, the love hormone, strands of DNA, which we typically see illustrated as a winding double helix, those strands relax and straighten out, which is pretty fascinating when you think about it. The strands of DNA react to the love hormone oxytocin. So, what do we know about pregnant and lactating women? They're feeling, most of them, I would imagine, having been one myself, they're feeling a tremendous amount of the emotion of love and very connected to this feeling of creation, because they're growing a human being in the body. So, humans have demonstrated that if one of us is capable of doing something, we're all capable of doing something. That was most famously demonstrated when Roger, I can't remember his last name now. He was the runner who broke the long set speed of athletes who ran track. Up until he ran in the Olympics, I believe, it was expected that human beings could not run faster than 4.5 or 5 minutes a mile. And this gentleman broke that barrier. And once that happened, once that became part of the human consciousness, that in fact it could happen, then people all over the globe started doing it. It's as though once something is demonstrated in the human consciousness, it is there and accessible by all of us to do this. So consciousness is a very powerful thing. So we have proof that the stuff that makes up our world, photons of light, packets of light, respond to human DNA. We know that human DNA is affected by emotion. And so what is an emotion? For a long time, I thought that the word feeling and emotion meant the same thing. And it wasn't until I began to study and really kind of become a disciple of self-mastery, if you will, that I came to understand there's a difference between an emotion and a feeling. A feeling is present within the physical body when a thought and a corresponding emotion come together, they produce a feeling in the body. So when you have a thought that isn't necessarily in alignment with the truth of who you are, who we are, and each of us is a spark of the divine expressing itself here in the physical world, when you have a thought that isn't in alignment with that, there's a corresponding emotion that joins it to produce a feeling in the body. The feeling is fear-based. So the emotion could be doubt, worry, anxiety, anything that's sort of within that fear-based family. So if you'll change your thought, for example, if you're looking at the subject of money, for example, and you want more money, and if you're thinking the thought of I want more money, and the underlying feeling of that is I don't have enough money, if you're looking at your current situation, or you're anticipating a situation in the future where you don't know where it's going to come from or how it's going to come, you might be affirming, I am rich, I am wealthy, I am prosperous. But if you have this underlying belief that contradicts that, you're going to feel that feeling. You're going to feel uncomfortable. So the feeling, for most of my life, I believed that the feeling was confirmation that the thought I was having was true. And what I learned in my early 40s was that that's not true. That negative feeling that I was experiencing was part of the mechanism that makes up human beings. It's kind of a fail-safe, I think, that the Creator installed in us to get our attention, because pain gets our attention, doesn't it? When we're uncomfortable, when we're upset, we're worried, we're scared, that has our attention. So that feeling is meant to get your attention so that you can stop, take some deep breaths to bring yourself back to center, to feel as calm as you possibly can, because when you're breathing, when you're focused on your breathing, you're not going to be thinking the thoughts. You can't hold two thoughts in your brain at the same time, in your mind at the same time. So when you feel that feeling of discomfort, what I've learned to do is when I feel that, it gets my attention and I say, okay, I'm feeling like this. I take some deep breaths, and there's actually a physiological reason for taking deep breaths when you're feeling anxious as well. There is a nerve in the body called the vagus nerve that is responsible for reacting to the fight or flight hormone. And so when you're in fight or flight, which is that feeling of fear and anxiety, if you take some deep breaths, the vagus nerve is activated and it calms down and slows down the flowing of that fight or flight hormone. Alternatively, if you follow yourself down the rabbit hole of fear and anxiety with those thoughts, your brain's going to create more and more and you're going to feel more and more and more uncomfortable. Over time, that can actually become your outlook on life. That can become how you show up. It's almost as though that hormone has run through your physical body for so long, the receptor sites on your cell have adapted to process that hormone, and it becomes your attitude, the way you show up in the world. But you don't have to do that. If you will understand that uncomfortable feeling is there to get your attention, take some deep breaths, calm down, bring yourself back to a place of as much peace as you can get, and then ask yourself, what was I just thinking about? Well, I was thinking about money. Okay, so was I thinking about what it feels like to have plenty of money, or was I thinking about the fact that I need more money and I don't have the money and I'm worried about where the money is going to come from. Because if you'll allow yourself to take advantage of this practice over a period of time, you're going to start seeing different results showing up in your life. I know this because I did it and I continue to do it. On last week's show, I talked about what I consider to be a miracle that I produced around a situation I had with my home. And I didn't know then what I know now, but I was practicing these principles even back then and got a wonderful result from it. At the time, I was focused on, I wanted to heal myself. I was having some physical challenges and I was really focused on healing myself and letting myself heal. And I was making some choices to put my health above other things. And most people, including myself, you know, several years before that would have said, you're crazy. You know, you have to make money. You have to support yourself. You have a child, you're a single mother. But I had gotten myself into a situation where I really had no other choice but to put my health first. And ultimately, I had a wonderful outcome, which I was hoping for. You know, that's faith, right? The things of things hoped for, the thing faith, you know, of things not seen. But that feeling of discomfort is what sort of got my attention. And really, it was a lot of that. That was a lot of the motivation for me to do the work that I've done over these last 15 to 20 years. I consider myself to be a bit of a way shower, coming to recognize the purpose of thought, the purpose of emotion, the purpose of feeling, what feelings are telling us, and how to use them and tap into that part of creation that is us. We, as I said, we are a spark of the divine. We are gods walking around in these physical bodies, expressing itself into the world of form. So I do see that we have a caller. I will say, actually, there's a couple. If you have a question that you'd like to address with me, hit the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and I'll see your hand go up, quote unquote, and I'll open your mic and we can discuss your question. So a few years back, I came across, serendipitously, I came across this interesting article about an American neuroscientist, yes, who was attending an international conference of neurologists in Italy. And one of the activities that the meeting sponsor and the meeting planner had put together for the group in their spare time, because they don't spend all their time sitting around and talking about neurology, was to visit the Sistine Chapel. And many of us are familiar with one of the paintings on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. It's by Michelangelo, and it's called The Creation of Adam. And this was in the early 90s. And this physician, his name was, I have the article here in front of me, Dr. Frank Lynn Meshberger. And he was part of this group. They were, you know, being given a tour of the Sistine Chapel. And Michelangelo's painting of the creation of Adam. And, of course, the tour guide directed their attention to the ceiling. And they're all looking at this beautiful painting. And this Dr. Meshberger observes aloud to his colleagues, you know what? That looks exactly like the outline of a human brain. And there was this discussion about the different aspects of the painting that corresponded with the frontal lobe, with the pons, with where the spinal cord comes out of the cerebellum. And there was a lot of discussion about this, like, wow, how come no one ever noticed this before? And I'll post this website, this article link in the comments of the archive show page so that if you're interested, you can go and read this article as well. But they went on to do sort of an overlay there. You know, they had the picture of the beautiful painting, and then they had the outline of the brain and the different physical structures within the brain. And then they overlaid that over the painting of the creation of Adam. And the conclusion they came to was one of, wow, what was Michelangelo trying to tell us through this picture? And one thing we know about Michelangelo was he lived in a very interesting time in the history of the Catholic Church, when the Catholic Church was the power in the world. And anything that contradicted them or threatened their power base was quickly shot down. There were wonderful artists like Michelangelo, not Michelangelo, but like him, who were put to death because of their ideas that they were putting out into the world. And he saw this and said, you know, that's not going to happen to me. But he was able to put out his message that was clearly divinely inspired. This came from somewhere, because back then the Catholic Church did not allow physicians to perform operations on the physical body, not even autopsies. It was illegal, and you could be prosecuted and executed for doing operations, even post-mortem, on the physical body. So there was really no way for him to know the structure of the human brain at that time. So where did he get this information from? I would posit that it was divinely inspired. He got it directly from the divine. So I think the message in that painting is, because if you've seen the painting, it's very prominently God emerging from the brain. His right hand is reaching out across a chasm to a naked Adam who is lying back on a cloud. And Adam has extended his left hand out to God, and God has extended his right hand to Adam. And they don't touch, but they come very close to touching each other. What we know about, well, okay, so when I say we, it's very widely accepted in Eastern medicine circles, in metaphysical circles, that the human body corresponds to certain esoteric and metaphysical principles that are demonstrated in this painting. For example, the right side of the body represents the male energy. The right side of the body, male being action-oriented, initiation, you know, banging it out in the physical, if you will. It also is represented by the term the father. So the father in the painting, represented by God, is a thought. So the father is represented by a thought. God had a thought about this world, about the earth, about the stars and the planets and space. God had a thought about creating a human being, and those things came into being. So when God is extending his right hand, that is a metaphor for taking the action. Adam extending his left hand represents the female aspect of humanity. So the left side of the body represents the female aspect of our experience in the world. Female being receptive. What science has proven is that the mind, the father, if you will, the right side, represents conscious thought. And the left side represents subconscious thought. And so when we become aware that our thoughts are creative, and we become more deliberate and focused around our thoughts, we literally impregnate the subconscious with these conscious focused thoughts of things that we wish to bring about. The subconscious is passive. It doesn't have any judgment about what you believe or what you think. It responds to thought. It basically creates what you're focused on. It doesn't say, ooh, you know, are you sure you want to create bankruptcy? Are you sure you want to create ill health? Are you sure you want to create, you know, unemployment? It just says, you know, okay, you know, ask it and it's given. So one of the things that I came to sort of recognize, I was raised in the Catholic tradition, and I haven't practiced Catholicism in more than 3 decades. But as I've learned and integrated more and more of these, of this understanding of who I am and where I came from, and the rest of us as well, one thing I was looking back on, because I meditate every morning, I had started doing more prayer as opposed to just meditation. And if you know anything about Catholicism, you know that you're taught from a very young age in your catechism that first you make the sign of the cross and then you say your prayer. Well, the sign of the cross, the way that that is performed, is you take your right hand, and again, your right hand, right, the hand of action, the hand of the Father, the hand of doing, the hand of deliberateness, and you place the fingers of your right hand on your forehead, right in the middle of your forehead, and you say, in the name of the Father. And in biblical tradition, the word name, actually, it's a word that's supposed to symbolize nature, in the nature of the Father, in the action of the Father. So you put your hand, the fingers of your right hand on your forehead, and you say, in the name of the Father. Then you drop directly down and you put your fingers of your right hand over the heart area, which is where the heart is actually the bridge between the lower energy centers and the upper energy centers. And the heart is where you feel the feeling as you're thinking the thought of the things you want to create. So you put the fingers of your right hand over your heart, and there you say, in the name of the Son being Christ, the Christ energy. And so first your hand goes in, the right hand goes in the middle of your forehead, in the name, the nature of the Father, down over your breastbone, in the name of the Son, again, the nature of Christ, the Creator. Then your right hand goes to your left shoulder, and you say, and of the Holy Spirit. Okay, that's the left shoulder. The left shoulder is the feminine, the receptive, and everything comes from Spirit. Everything that is of this world comes into this world from the Creator, from Spirit. The Creator is in the spiritual world. So in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And then you put your right hand on your right shoulder and you say, Amen. And that's the ancient word for, and so it is. Let it be so. So I was thinking about that one morning when I'm meditating, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a hidden meaning there that wasn't translated to me as a child. But now with these principles that I've been studying and working with over these years, I'm like, that makes sense. So you're basically focusing your mind, the mind comes up with a very deliberate conscious thought. You connect with that thought through your heart. You allow it to come from Spirit, and you claim it by saying, let it be so. Amen. So this is basically what this beautiful painting by Michelangelo is saying, is that's how we create, and we get our creative abilities through the thought and emotion and feeling aspects of our human experience. So I personally find that to be really fascinating. I love sort of following these clues that are right there for us. They are out there. Most of them are hiding in plain sight. They're right there for us, and we can access that information anytime we want to. So moving on from that, Roger Bannister, that's the name of the guy who broke the 4-minute mile. It's amazing how these things come to me in the strangest moments. Anyway, again, you're listening to Mary Jo Bull on Source Energy Radio. We're talking about self-mastery via the law of attraction. I do see that we've got several callers on the line. I would love to chat with any of you, especially if you have questions or circumstances that you're wanting to talk through. You can hit the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and I'll open up your mic, and we can have that conversation. You can stay anonymous. You don't have to tell me your name. You can give me a fake name if you want to, but we can certainly have a conversation because one of the things that is really key about the work that I do is to help us, myself included, declutter our thought process. Sometimes you have to ask yourself, where do these thoughts come from? You know, am I having these thoughts or am I receiving these thoughts from somewhere, right? One of the things that's really important to know and to understand is that when we come into this physical world of form, when the soul enters the physical body, we are these pristine, beautiful, lovely creatures who are, you know, blank slates, as it were. And we spend our formative years from the age of birth to the age of 7 with family and institutions, people around us, church, government, school, family mythology, spending time with our primary caregivers. And we're absorbing information from this physical world of form, especially in the first 2 years of our life, with no discernment as to whether or not anything is true, whether or not anything that we're absorbing is something we want to believe. We are accepting. We are sponges. We have no discernment. We have no judgment. We are just taking this information in. This is becoming part of the subconscious. And what I was mentioning earlier is that the subconscious doesn't discern and it doesn't judge and it doesn't question. It simply accepts. So the subconscious is the seat of all of our memories and all of our beliefs and all of our ideas. All of that is stored in the subconscious. And when you consider that we're taking all of this in from a time in our life when we don't have the ability to think like what we're doing right now, we certainly don't have the ability of speech. We can't question what we're receiving. We don't have the capability of that. We don't even know that it's an option. Frankly, many of us don't even know it's an option most of our life. So there was a saint, Saint Ignatius of Loyola, who said, "You give me a child until the age of 7, and I'll give you back the adult they're going to become." Because all of our programming, all of our conditioning happens from birth until the age of 7. And if you'll look around, you'll see that most spiritual traditions have some sort of a rite of passage ceremony around the age of 7 to mark that age, that once you're 7 years old, you've got all the programming and all the conditioning that's then going to lead you sort of into the person that you're going to become. And of course, you don't know, and most of us don't know. Certainly our parents didn't know, most of us, our parents didn't know, their parents didn't know, that you can decide and discern what you want to believe and what's not true for you. And very few people have been taught that. I mean, I certainly wasn't taught that. And it took me 40 years to finally say, I've got this feeling of fear in my body and I've had it for so long. What is it? And how do I get rid of it? How do I feel better? So up until the age of 7, you're just taking in information. It's just being stored in the consciousness, stored in your subconscious. there's a belief that the soul, the completion of the seeding of the soul, happens between the age of 2 and the age of 7, and that the ego is fully seated in the consciousness and in the body at the age of 7. So the ego is what actually helps us to discern and decide what we want. So you're 7 years old, you go through adolescence, you know, puberty, and then you go into, you know, your teenage years, and then you're a young adult, and then you go into your 20s, and you're having more and more experiences. And really what's happening is you're sort of sifting and sorting, you're gathering information and about what you want and what you don't want. And if you have come upon information like this, like this call, like other sources of this information out there, if you've come upon that information, this means that on some level you're ready to hear this in order for you to change your life and have the experience that you want. So that is wonderful news, isn't it? To know that you wouldn't be hearing this information, you wouldn't have felt attracted to this information if part of your soul were leading you to, there's so much more to life than what you have been aware of up until now. And now we're ready to hear more about it. So the wonderful time about this time, in human evolution, is science and spirituality have come together. For the first 1,500 years, maybe more, I'm talking about from the time of Christ through the time of Newton. So for the first 1,500 years of humanity, all there was spirituality. There was no such thing as science. There was just spirit. Religious and wisdom texts depict that closer relationship between human beings and the Creator. We were much more closely aligned with and adapted to and connected with that which create, well, the way I term it is that which intended itself here for the purpose of self-expression. You know, the only there, I remember hearing years ago that the reason why God created man, God created us to express in this physical world was God, it wanted to know itself. It wanted to know itself, all aspects of itself. And how do you know yourself? You know something about yourself in relationship with something else. You can't know what you are until you see what you're not. You don't know light until you know darkness. You don't know up until you know down. Right? So everything, this is a very dualistic world that we live in. It's, having trouble finding the words in my head. Polarized. This is a world of polarity, one side or the other. So as you're having these life experiences, some of them happy and joyous and some of them sad and demoralizing and upsetting and traumatic, as you're having these life experiences, those things are happening, and you can experience what it's doing is ultimately it's helping you to come to an awareness that there is more to life, there is more to who you are. And if you are interested in having the life that you desire, the life of your dreams, then that information and that ability is available to you. It's all internal. It's all inside. You may have heard that saying, you know, happiness is an inside job. All internal and available to you if you understand when you come to understand what is thought, what is emotion, what is feeling. Those are all sort of the spiritual side of life. And then in the 1500s, Isaac Newton introduced science. spirituality is the why or the how. And actually, spirituality is the how, and science is the why. Maybe I'm getting those mixed up. Anyway, science is really more based in matter. It's more based in the physical, right? So science is the study of the brain. You know, how exactly does the brain work? And how do those things that happen in these physical processes and physical faculties, why is it that they affect, why is it that when I change the way I think and I change the way I feel, that suddenly my life, my outer life, reflects back to me my inner experience? Why is that? Why is that? Well, we talked about it in the beginning of this show. Science has proven that the stuff that makes up the world we live in, photons or packets of light, photons respond to human DNA. That has been proven. DNA responds to human emotion. That has been proven through the Human Genome Project, which proved that while the majority of human beings do not produce vitamin C naturally in the body, pregnant and lactating women do. And the way they came to that conclusion was they saw a difference during the study of, in the Human Genome Project, they saw a difference between the DNA, how the DNA of a pregnant and or lactating woman looks in comparison with that winding double helix that we're all very familiar with. The DNA of a pregnant or lactating woman is relaxed and straight, like long strands of DNA that are very relaxed. They've also proven that the reason why our face reflects our age, some more in others than in others, is because when we're under a lot of stress, and scientists have said that 75% of us live in fight or flight 90% of the time. So there's a possibility that if you're 60 years old, you've been living the majority of your life in fight or flight mode. You know, the intensity can vary, but that's basically the mode that you've been operating in for a large portion of your life. And the reason why those emotions are reflected in our face, you know, women talk about crow's feet, you know, there's the marionette lines from the nose to the mouth, why we have the worry lines across our forehead, is because when we're in that fight or flight mode, that DNA twists. It basically twists and becomes tighter and tighter. And that's what forms those physical reflections on the face. So that would explain why there are some people who maybe had access to this information before the rest of us, who may be of an advanced age, but when you look at their face, people say, wow, you know, you don't look 90, you look 65. Well, that's genetic. It's a gene thing. And what's really amazing is what's also been proven over the years, genes can also react. They do, in fact, react to human emotion, to feeling. For a long time, it was believed by scientists that you were born with your genetic blueprint and it is what it is, and you're going to live with it until the day you die. That the genes were set in stone, so to speak, and there was nothing that you could do about it. Well, what they've learned is in the last 25 to 30 years is that that's not true. That in fact, genes turn off and on like Christmas lights all the time, like blinking Christmas lights all the time, in reaction to feeling. And feeling is a product of thought and the corresponding emotion. there is a man out there right now who is doing miraculous work around this, what they call epigenetics. His name is Dr. Joe Dispenza. He has a fascinating story, and he had a very traumatic physical injury and what many would call a very miraculous healing. He probably wouldn't call it miraculous because he actually lived through it. But the bottom line of his story is that he broke 6 vertebra in his back after he was hit by a car during a triathlon. And he went against medical advice by some of the best neurosurgeons on the West Coast and decided not to get what's called Harrington rod surgery. You can Google that as well. And he had been learning about spiritual principles and decided that his mantra was that which made the body heals the body. And so in 12 weeks' time, not months, in 12 weeks' time, he went from that traumatic injury to running in marathons again. He healed his body through thought and emotion to produce a feeling. Really fascinating story. You can certainly Google him. He's got lots of videos on YouTube. Again, his name is Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's written several books, one of which is frankly my favorite. It's called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. The theory behind that book is that the way that we heal our genes, the reason that our genes turn off and on is because through changing our thought and corresponding emotions and changing the feeling in our body, which involves changing the hormones that run through the bloodstream in the body, through that process, we literally become someone new. And that someone new doesn't have that genetic predisposition. Therefore, the genetic condition is not present in the body. He does workshops all over the world. There are people walking out of these workshops who have gone into the workshops with genetic conditions like Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS. There's another disease of the blood that basically mostly affects African Americans that's genetic. People who have gone in with that condition who've walked out without it. People who've walked in with cancer, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, thyroid conditions, who've walked out after a week's time and they don't have those conditions anymore. And their medical tests reflect the healing. So this man did it. And as the story that I told in the beginning of tonight's show, Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, then people all over the globe started breaking the 4-minute mile. But up until Roger Bannister did it, it was believed that it couldn't be done. Once he did it, and that was very public because he was human consciousness and people all over the world started doing it. Well, Joe Dispenza healed himself from this spinal injury, and it was a very traumatic spinal injury. When he was thrown off of his bicycle after being hit by a car, he fell in such a way that the vertebral arch, which is the bony structure through which the spinal cord proceeds from the brain down to the bottom of the spine, the spinal arch is the vertebral arch comes off of the back of the vertebra and protects the spinal cord. Well, when he had this injury, the vertebral arch collapsed on itself and in several places, and he had fragments of bone in his spinal column. So when he was taken to the emergency room and admitted to intensive care, he was told unless he had this Harrington rod surgery, he would never walk again. I've seen a couple of videos that he talks that he has given where, you know, he says, you know, I was 24, 25 years old. I was a kid. I didn't have a family. I didn't have children. You know, I didn't know what I didn't know. I just knew that I didn't want to spend my life, the rest of my life, on pain medication and living a less than ideal lifestyle. And I'd been learning, you know, these spiritual principles. And I had heard that which made the body heals the body. And all I had to do was give it a template to follow and let it do its thing. And so, interestingly enough, he's a chiropractor. So he was very intimately familiar with the structure of the skeletal system and the nerves that come out of the brain and through the body. He was very intimately aware of those structures. He knew what they were supposed to look like when they're healthy and they're whole. And so his strategy basically was, you know, I wasn't doing anything and I couldn't go anywhere. I was laying on my stomach because I couldn't lay on my back. So what else was I going to do? So he would spend time every single day going into meditation with his eyes closed and picturing one by one by one by one a perfect spinal canal, a healthy spinal cord, a healthy, healthy vertebra, healthy vertebral arch. Now he said, you know, it probably took him a good 4 to 5 weeks before he finally hit what he calls the sweet spot, where he had worked through any resistance that he had to being able to heal. And of course, you know, we all have it. He would be focused and thinking these thoughts of this beautifully healed spinal canal. And then, you know, he'd get a little bit lazy and the thoughts would start creeping in. Am I going to have to sell my home? Am I going to have to sell my practice? Am I going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life? And so he was very, you know, he made himself very disciplined about it. As soon as those resistant thoughts introduced themselves into his thinking, he would stop and he would go back and start all over again. And he says, you know, like I said, I've seen several of these videos. He says it was very frustrating because he just couldn't focus. And most of us have that issue, right? Focus is a skill. And he teaches that now. Focus is a skill that you can learn, like golf or tennis, but you have to do it, like when you learn golf or tennis. So pretty miraculous that 12 weeks after this traumatic injury, when the best doctors on the West Coast told him, you have to have this operation or you're never going to walk again, and he made other decisions against medical advice, 12 weeks later, he walks back into his life. And he says that he made a deal with the universe when he was going through this process. And he said, if you will help me to heal, I'll spend the rest of my life teaching this to people, helping them to know what they can do and the truth of who they are and how they can heal themselves. And not just heal themselves from physical ailments. The principles that he introduces in his workshops and what I'm talking about here on this show tonight, part of your life. Those can be applied to any part of your life. And here's some really, really good news, okay? You can have 5 or 6 areas of your life that are not going the way you want them to go, and one area of your life that's going well, that you're happy with. If you will do your best to focus on that one area of your life that's going well and focus on appreciation and gratitude about the aspects of that aspect of your life, of that area of your life that are going well, those other 5 or 6, eventually the solutions to those situations are going to show up. You're not going to have to do anything about going to find them, or they're just going to dissipate. They're not going to be an issue. They're just going to go away. What Dr. Dispenza is teaching is that when there's the admonition in scripture when Jesus says turn the other cheek, most spiritual and wisdom wisdom and religious traditions have interpreted that as martyrdom. If they hit you on, you know, if they slap you on one cheek, turn the other cheek and let them hit you on that one as well. That's not what that scripture is meant to relay. What he's saying, what Jesus is saying is look in a different direction. Don't look at what's causing you to feel uncomfortable. Look in the direction that you want to experience. It sounds overly simplistic, doesn't it? So there's a situation in your life, just don't look at it. Look somewhere else. Believe me, I know that expression because that was my first reaction as well. The first time I heard that I could do, be, and have anything that I identified as my desire simply by changing the way I think and feel, I was elated. This is wonderful. All I have to do is change my thoughts. And then I started doing the work and realized that the formula is simple, not necessarily easy, because what we're doing when we're changing our thoughts and therefore the emotions eventually come along is we are peeling back the layers of those birth to 7 years of conditioning and programming that we received and didn't have the understanding or the consciousness to reject or make a decision otherwise. The work is basically peeling back all that conditioning and all that programming, giving yourself permission to believe what for 1500 or years or longer spiritual traditions have taught us. Have said, ye are gods. We are sparks of the divine in the physical body. Giving yourself permission to believe that's true, because really that's one of the keys to this. Giving yourself permission to believe and then instilling that in your, using your free will, choose to believe that that is true. And to stick with it and to pay attention to how you feel. And when you're thinking thoughts that aren't in alignment with that truth, stop doing that. Recognize that that feeling that you're experiencing is valuable to you. It's a tool. It's there to get your attention. It's purposeful. It's not confirmation that the terrifying things you're telling yourself are true. That feeling is there to get your attention to say, hey, you're looking at something you don't want right now. What is it exactly that you do want? And let's find a way to look at that. And I am here to tell you, because I have been my own guinea pig for decades, I'm here to tell you that you can give yourself permission and life will reflect that back to you. I promise you that that's true. You just have to give yourself permission to believe, change your thoughts, make choices in accordance with those things that you want to see reflected in your life. You just have to do the work. And I will tell you, it was probably about 3 years ago, and I was working on a condition, and I found him. I was led to him. Interesting how I was led to him. But I listened to his teachings, and he was telling a story about a woman who had come to many of his workshops. This woman had a genetic disease, a genetic condition that was skeletal. And what happened was that over time, the framework of her bones was disintegrating, and her body was responding, and she was becoming more and more incapable of ambulation. She was having to make special accommodations in her life. And she had finally reached a point where, I would imagine she reached a point where, like, I either have to find a way to fix this or I'm done. She was young. She was only in her mid-30s. And somehow she had come across Dr. Joe, gone to several of his workshops. She had confronted him at one of them and said, look, I don't believe that these things are true. I want to. And I keep coming back because I want to believe them, but I don't believe them. And Joe took the time to sit and talk with her. He describes it as when you're changing the way you think, you're crossing the river of change. That's how he illustrates it. It's like crossing a river. But if you'll just stick to it, the body will eventually reflect the deliberateness of the mind. So over time, with the beliefs that we hold, the body becomes the servant and the mind becomes the master. And it's supposed to be the other way around. The mind is the servant and the body is the master. So when basically we begin to think with our body, we think the thoughts that we're thinking based on past experiences that we've had and programming that we've received, pretty soon the body just kind of takes over and we really aren't even thinking about it anymore. The subconscious is now running the deal. The subconscious is running these programs in the background that we're not even aware of. And so that's kind of how you explain, you know, how you're like, if you're driving on a long trip and you get from point A to point B, and then maybe you stop for gas or to take a rest break, and you realize you don't even really remember the last hour, you know, you're driving. You don't really remember the last hour of the, well, how are you driving the car? You were not consciously driving the car. Something's driving the car. That's your subconscious. I'm probably, giving away my age here, but back in the day, when we had landlines, everyone had landlines in their home, and we went to the push button technology. We went from rotary dial phones to trimline push button phones. I remember many times, I couldn't actually remember a phone number, but if I picked up the phone, my finger knew the pattern to dial this person. Where did that come from? I wasn't consciously doing that. The body literally becomes the mind, and the work is to put the body, the mind, back where it belongs and put the body back where it belongs. So when I was listening to Dr. Joe and he was talking about this woman healed herself of a genetic condition, polycystic. I wish I could remember what it is now. It's quite a mouthful. After several of his workshops, she came to in Baltimore, Maryland. And it was, so I saw him speak 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, in West Virginia. And he had just come from this particular workshop where this woman came to attend the workshop. And when he saw her, she looked fabulous, and she wasn't using any sort of crutch or walker. You would not know to see her that she had ever had this very debilitating condition. And before he went on stage, he pulled her aside and said, "Hey, you look great. How are you doing? Do you want to come up on stage and tell your story? It's very inspiring. And, you have a lot to share." And you know what she said? She said, "I don't even remember much about that story. I'm not that person anymore. I've literally become someone new. I can't even really remember the details of it." She had broken the habit of being herself. There's a scripture in the canonical Bible and also in the Gospel of Thomas that says you can't pour new wine into old wineskins. That scripture illustrates the story that I just told. This woman poured new information and converted old wineskin into a new wineskin. She became someone else. And the new person she was didn't have those thoughts and beliefs anymore. Therefore, that pattern wasn't present in her body anymore. So I actually went to West Virginia in May of 2016 or 2017 to hear one of my very favorite speakers, a gentleman by the name of Greg Braden. I went to hear him speak about a new book that he had written. And on the program was this other guy, Joe Dispenza, who I had heard of because he was actually one of the featured speakers in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, which came out sometime in the 90s. If you have a few minutes, I recommend that film because it illustrates what we're talking about here today. Let me just take a quick break and say, if anyone who's, we're getting more and more callers, but apparently you're all listeners and not talkers. If anybody has a question or condition, a situation they'd like to address directly with me, hit the number 1 on your telephone keypad and I'll open up your mic and we can talk about it. Don't have to give your name. You can stay anonymous. Anyway, I went to see Greg speak and Joe was part of the program and I was aware of him, as I said, because I had seen him in the movie, you know, several years beforehand, but I went to see Greg. I probably have seen him speak 3 or 4 times in person now. He's one of my favorite teachers. Highly recommend his book, The Isaiah Effect, if you're looking for really interesting literature about what I'm talking about on this program. The Isaiah Effect, great book. Greg's a great writer and he tells wonderful stories, really illustrates these concepts. So I'd gone to see him speak in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. Joe was on the program. I'd driven up to Berkeley Springs from where I live, which is in the Washington suburbs of Washington, D.C., and I had a hotel room for that Saturday night. I heard Greg speak on Saturday, and I was kind of tired, and I thought, you know, I think I'm going to go home. After Greg got done speaking around 4 in the afternoon, Joe was going to do like a 90-minute introduction to what he was going to be talking about on Sunday. I had some friends who were there, so they were going to stay and listen to Joe talk. So I decided to stay and listen as well. And when he got done speaking, my inner being was like, you need to stay and you need to hear him talk on Sunday. And I did. And he's a wonderful speaker, a fascinating guy, very grounded. Okay. Very matter of fact, delivers the information in a really valuable way. Heard him speak. Felt just invigorated. I'm like, okay, this guy, I need to start paying attention to what he says. So I was found him on YouTube, listening to his YouTube videos. And I remember one of the things that he said when he was talking about this idea of crossing the river of change was 3 weeks. It can take just 3 weeks for you to rewire the neurons in your brain so that old thoughts and ideas that you've been telling yourself, you're not good enough, you're not worthy, all those old, you know, memes that run through your mind, if you'll do the work for 3 weeks' time, one day you will hit the sweet spot where all of a sudden those voices are gone. And I can tell you from personal experience what he says is true because I did it and it's true for me now. I would say 92-95% of the time I am in a state of inner peace and I don't get triggered, certainly not like I used to. I feel peaceful and calm, optimistic and hopeful, even with the stuff that's going down in the world today. I actually live and work in our nation or near our nation's capital. I work in our nation's capital. I live near our nation's capital. And y'all are very familiar with the craziness that's happening here in Washington and the things that we're seeing in the news. I just don't get affected by that I don't really pay much attention to it. My life reflects peace and calm, and my life gets better and better every single day because I've really taken these principles to heart. I've been doing the work for 15 or 20 years, and I can say with authority that what you're hearing on shows like this and books like that is the truth. And if you'll do it, you'll have the same results. So I see someone has their hand up. Your area code is 408. So I'm going to go ahead and open your line. Here we go. Your line should be live. Can you hear me? Let's try this one. Now your line is live. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Hi. I can. What is your first name?
Craig.
Craig. What can I do for you, yeah. Craig? Do you have a question tonight?
Well, it's not so much a question, but I just kind of go along with the way you're talking, you know, and I don't want to break the flow, you know. The flow.
Well, this is a good time.
What you're conveying. So, yeah, this is a good time. Nothing like having a good time, right?
That's right.
So, that's right. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, sweet, 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 sweet. And you hit my sweet spot. Here it is. When you open up to someone who has your best interest, because remember something, our minds are meant outside of ourselves. So it would have their best interest in your thought process, you know, in our thought process, you know, because we're going to get somewhere. Because when someone opens up to you like this, then what can you expect to get from that relationship? You're going to get someone who values the relationship. And sometimes we may say we're sorry for something when it wasn't even our fault. We just want to say we're sorry because we value the relationship and not the ego problem. And a lot of time there's an ego involved. You know, and that's a false sense of self. That's not really who the person really is. And so a master can dissolve that ego so that the master can have a relationship with the person who's being drawn into the relationship. So it's wonderful when you bring to the relationship trust, because you have to have trust if you're going to have a relationship with somebody, right? You're going to have honesty. Well, yeah. You're going to have honesty in a relationship, because honesty will tell it like it is. It's no sugarcoating involved. You know what I mean? And while all this is going on, there's no sugarcoat involved. Honesty also allows you to take the responsibility for your feelings. Now, a lot of people don't take responsibility for their feelings. What they do is they rely on their feelings entirely too much, because what's underneath their feelings is what they love and doesn't, what they don't love. And that gets tangled up. And when it's all tangled up, you're not getting underneath your feelings. So what they do is they live a life like that, but that's only from the neck up. But there's other people that live a life different than that. And so I'm just like thinking, well, how does this play out in what you're saying? I mean, is there anything that we can learn from examining our feelings in light of truth that would be in our life and that allows us to have this relationship with these people? That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. So I think I stated earlier in the show, and I think you might have joined us after I had made this statement, that the reason why it is said that the reason why the divine sent sparks of itself into this world of form is because it wanted to know itself in all aspects of itself. And the way that we know ourselves is in relationship with and to something else or someone else. So when people show up in our life experience, especially those sort of significant relationships like what you're talking about, like a soulmate or someone that you're very close to romantically or a really, really good friend, when those relationships show up in our life, it is, they're reflecting something back to us. Because what science has proven to us is that everything in this physical world of form is made up of the same thing. We're all made up of photons or packets of light. If you put your hand underneath a very high powered microscope and you drill down, so to speak, what you're going to find at the highest magnification is there is nothing there. There's no flesh, there's no bone, there's no blood, there's no sinew, there's nothing there. There's just space and these photons of light. And what we know about photons of light is that they have a frequency. They vibrate. Everything has a vibrational frequency to it. And depending on the rate of the frequency is what is going to determine the nature or the being of the thing. So inanimate objects that can't move on their own, their vibratory frequency is fairly low. That's what makes them solid and inert. Human beings, on the other hand, we have a higher vibrational frequency because we are more sentient. That's not to say that inert objects aren't sentient, but we have the ability to reason, to think and to reason and to decide and discern. So there are those who say that the angelic realm or the spiritual realm vibrates at such a high frequency that that's why we aren't able to see it. Our eyes are devices that interpret vibration, just like our ears interpret vibrational patterns. You know that saying, if a tree falls in the woods and there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a sound? The answer to that question is no, it doesn't. There needs to be some sort of being there to receive the sound and interpret that vibration through the auditory faculty. So we can't see the spiritual realm because the vibratory pattern is too high. There have been times in history where those beings have slowed their vibration down enough that we can actually see them with our physical eyes. So whatever frequency you're broadcasting, so to speak, because when you're offering a feeling, that is actually a vibratory pattern, and feeling is the language of creation. So whatever you're feeling, your dominant thought, and in any given day, you can, be feeling really good or not so good or whatever, but you pretty much have a level that you'll reach every day. Whatever your dominant vibration is, that's what you're going to bring into your life. So if you're kind of in a rough spot in life, you're not particularly happy, you're unhappy with yourself, you're skeptical or cynical, that's probably not the best time to get into a relationship because you're going to attract you. And that's going to sort of be reflected back to you. You kind of can't help it.
Well, that's probably true.
Out, it's what you're going to get back, right? So it's been my experience. I know that.
Yeah, that's what happens. But a lot of times, what about you run into people that have a pride issue? And what I mean by the pride issue is that people have esteemed themselves in a high position, because of what they've acquired in this world, it's like, look at what I have and look what I did, and pride has a way of making itself higher. So when people down here who are, down here where even these people are at, which that's where they are, but they think they're up here, you come across people like this that have this issue. And I have to live my life upside down, because if I want to go up, I have to go down to where these people are. So there's a little bit of a difference there than by the way I'm talking about it as opposed to the way these people have done it. So
I think so. Are you talking about, for example, are you talking about work colleagues, people that you're with every single day,
well,
or
it could be in that situation. I'm not gonna exclude that situation from what I'm saying, because I think it could show up in that kind of a setting as well, in many different ways. Yes.
Okay.
If that's what you're experiencing, you know, in that way, yeah, there's a lot of that could be possibly going on, but you have to be aware of it. And like you were saying, when you can regulate your central nervous system, you know, that's where your nervous system, where it connects to the trunk of your brain, where you're supposed to know the difference between right and wrong. Well, mm-hmm. what I see as a problem is that when someone has the knowledge of good and evil, then when they open their mouth, it's just perverted in a real worse kind of way. So without the spiritual part of the enlightening, you know, being illuminated, if you will, with spiritual awareness, which is what I have, and I don't know how many other people do, but with that awareness, that gives you your abilities that you didn't have before when you were in that spiritual darkness. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because now you can see that love has taken care of all this for you, and through your life, it's going to be something like that. Now, I like the way the Navajo women do it. If you ever know anything about the Navajo women, when a young lady is going to become with a child, you know, all these women just come out of the woodwork, you know what I mean? And they just surround this lady and they put all this love, they food and this, all these stories and just positive. They just empower this girl. And then when she has that baby, all that love that was instilled in that woman, she gets to put all that into that baby. So I really admire the way they do it. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
you know, we have to learn. And sometimes learning takes time. You can't take like a seed and open your window at night and chuck it out there and close your window, go to sleep, get up next day and get fruit.
Right.
You're not going to be able to get fruit. You know why? It takes time to grow. It's going to need some things. You know what I mean? And when people
mm-hmm.
learn to see themselves clearly and they realize that they make mistakes, that is some good fertilizer right there, because it's not about you. Remember? So that's good fertilizer for the soil that this is growing in. You know what I mean? The soil of grace. And this is where the tree of life is growing, you know? So it helps you. It helps you to die to yourself and not make it about you. Remember, love fixed everything. Hello. So love fixed it where you make mistakes, because it's inevitable. We're all going to make mistakes. But at the moment of realization that you're about to make a mistake, or that you made a mistake, you have an opportunity to do what? An opportunity to not make it about you, but go ahead and do what you were doing.
What do you mean when you say not about you? What exactly do you mean when you say that?
Okay. Like when you live, when you can see yourself, you know how you used to be, you know? And so there was a process where you went through a time where you were retraining your hypothalamus gland, because obviously that's where the knee jerk response to stuff is. And sometimes you got all these bad habits and you wanted to correct these things. So you had to do some things that were going to require you putting some effort into your rehabilitation. Now, of course, sometimes people don't get successful because they give up on themselves. But you, on the other hand, were successful because you didn't give up. You might have forgot to do some of the exercises that were given to you, but you remembered. And then you see, and then pretty soon it became like real time for you. So you don't have to recall these things. You just do them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get to, this is where the power that you were talking about, because you're getting in touch with yourself and you're going to train yourself. And you're, you know, the wellspring of life comes from what you think, what you say, and what you do. That's where this real wellspring comes into play. So it does matter what you think. It does matter what you say. It does matter what you do. But you can't change yourself, and you can't change somebody else. It would be impossible. You know, it's really difficult to change yourself. So this is where it becomes, where a spiritual thing comes into effect.
So what I'm actually hearing you say is what you were describing, it is all about you. or in my case, it is all about me. Not in a egotistical, the negative
right.
aspect of egotistical, but it is all about me, or it is all about you in whatever situation you're in, because there's always, especially the stuff that feels negative, if you will, oftentimes when you're feeling that feeling, and I have to warn us, there's only 3 minutes left in the show. So I'm going to finish the thought. There's going to be a show again next week, Greg. I would really like it if you would call in and we can continue this conversation. But when you're having these feelings, and I've been paying attention to this recently because I've noticed that when I'm hearing my colleagues talk to me, I'm having instantaneous judgments, and they're very critical of the other person. And whereas in the past, yeah. I might have had that knee-jerk response and said something that was going to end up coming back and biting me in the ass. Now what I do is I say, okay, look at what you're thinking right now. Where does that come from? Why are you being so critical? And then I get to the heart of it. I'm like, oh, okay, I know the root of that. Boom, it goes away. It doesn't happen anymore. So from that aspect, it really is all about each of us individually, because that's all we have is our own experiences, right? Our own memories, our own ideas. And when I can identify where those are coming from, then I can stop being really what I'm doing in that. I can sit and say all day long, you know, I am loving, I love these people, but if I'm being critical of them, I don't love them. And unconditional love, really what unconditional love really is loving in the situation, no matter what. Now, have I achieved that? Not yet, but it's loving no matter how they're showing up, loving no matter what's showing up in our experience. Because when you are able to feel unconditional love, that is when you are directly connected to source, to our source.
I got it.
That's where that's coming from. I do hope that you will call back next week. I would love to continue this conversation because a lot of people can really benefit from this. So
yeah, I agree.
If you have time, I'm going to go ahead and mute your mic because I got to shut us down. We've only got less than 90 seconds left.
Okay.
So call back next week if you can. I hope this show was as good for you guys as it was for me. I really, really, really enjoyed this. Great show. Thank you all. And especially you, Greg, for leaning into this level of vulnerability. I know that can be a little bit unsettling, but words may reach someone who's struggling with the same issue, and this could be their lifeline. So my next show is next Wednesday, March 4th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope you'll listen in. Thank you for listening to Universal Energy Radio tonight. If you like the show, please visit us at iTunes and rate the show. You can also leave a comment on this show's page in the archive show section. Would love to hear your feedback. Thank you all so much again for giving me your time and your attention. Thanks, Greg, for opening up with your question. Have a terrific week, and I hope to talk to you all soon, maybe next week. Good night.